first speaker, as you can see on your program, we have Brother Jerry Leslie, and he will be, of course, speaking on the subject of marriage, one which he has certainly experience in and great wisdom and counsel to add. So we'd like to turn this platform over to Brother Jerry Leslie.
Of Adam, God said, "It is not good that man should be alone. I will make him an helpmeet for him." This has the thought of one that helps as a counterpart. In this way, God completed the work of creation stated in Genesis 1:27 of male and female. As part of the divine likeness, it was necessary to have companion creatures capable of receiving and reflecting his thoughts and affections. Several thoughts are suggested in this original counterpart creations. First of all, there is the idea of the unity of man and wife. It is shown in the phrase, one flesh. Monogamy is established as a precedent in the one original couple. And then we see the subordination of the wife as being made subsequent to man. 1 Corinthians 11:8-9. For the man is not of the woman, but the woman of the man. Neither was the man created for the woman, but the woman for the man. So woman's role is supportive. It is complementary. She should take pleasure in completing and rounding out life and opportunity in the home. Man's role is to have authority as a provider for this extension of himself. Problems arise when roles are mixed or when purpose is lost sight of. These are easily confused in this day of stress when the woman expects the man to be her helpmate, to create for her time and opportunity and self-identity, or when man becomes abusive, cruel to his mate, or else neglects the assertive role of headship. Imitating the example of the Father of the universe, who provided man with a wife, fathers from the beginning considered it their duty and prerogative to select wives for their sons. This was not against her will, the woman's will, or her willingness. We see Abraham who spoke to his servant in Genesis 24:7-8. The Lord God of heaven, which took me from my father's house and from the land of my kindred, and which spake unto me, that sware unto me, saying, unto thy seed will I give this land. He shall send his angel before thee, and thou shalt take a wife unto my son from thence. And if the woman will not be willing to follow thee, then thou shalt be clear from this thy oath. Before the marriage contract was concluded, the young man was required to pay a stipulated price or service to the parents of his wife-to-be. This was not considered as a sale of the daughter, but a due regard and compensation of the family for the loss of her services in the home and for her education. Jacob had such an agreement with for Rachel. And Laban said unto Jacob, "Because thou art my brother, shouldest thou therefore serve me for naught? Tell me, what shall thy wages be?" And Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah was tender-eyed, but Rachel was beautiful and well-favored. And Jacob loved Rachel and said, I will serve thee 7 years for Rachel, thy younger daughter. And Laban said, it is better that I give her to thee than that I should give her to another man. Abide with me. And Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed to him but a few days for the love he had to her. Elsewhere we see Moses served Jethro for Zipporah. Boaz made a purchase from Naomi for Ruth. And Jesus bought the whole world, giving the price to the Father of justice. His only tangible possession received is the treasure found in the field purchased, his bride. Matthew 13:44. Marriage, as seen in the light of Scripture, was an occasion for joy and celebration. It was a wedding that provided Jesus the opportunity to share some grand lessons in the first miracle of his ministry. The account is found in John 1:1-11. Jesus did not flee from human society, but sanctified both the sorrowful and the joyful occasions of life. Here he instructs his servants to fill 6 water jars to the brim. The number 6 might refer to the present time of evil and labor, in contrast to 7 as a picture of completeness. For we have 6 days of creation, and it was finished on the 7th. There were 6 days of man's toil, and he is given rest on the 7th. 6 years were appointed for sowing and reaping. The land was to rest on the 7th. And 6,000 years have been given to man to labor under sin, and restitution occurs on the 7th. This part of the 6 vessels filled with water finds fulfillment in our role before our change. Their capacity was 2 or 3 firkins apiece. 1 firkin, I understand, was about 9 gallons. 2 or 3 firkins times 9 gallons would be somewhere between 18 and 27 gallons per vessel. Times 6 vessels would be somewhere between 108 and 162 gallons of water turned to wine. Jesus was preparing for many people, or the guests were very thirsty on this occasion. But the point is clearly that God and Christ also make lavish provisions for the marriage of the Lamb. Quantity and quality exceeds bare necessity, as in all that Jesus did. Consider the 5 loaves and 2 fishes, and they fed 5,000. With 12 baskets for fragments left over. 2x a draught of fishes were caught at his direction so as to exceed the capacity of the nets. Brethren, we are pictured in these water crocks. While here in the flesh we may be filled with the Spirit, the water of life, John 4:10-14, and Isaiah 12:3. Therefore with joy shall ye draw water out of the wells of salvation. Our justification is accomplished by the washing of the water of the Word. Now, what happens to the water, this justification, this right to life that Jesus permits us to use for a season and its accompanying privileges? Are the joys of the truth yours to hold for your own pleasure alone? The water does not become wine until it is drawn out. If not drawn out, the water would stagnate, and it will stagnate in you and in me, unless we share it with others. Isaiah 58, verse 10. And if thou draw out thy soul to the hungry, and satisfy the afflicted soul, then shall thy light rise in obscurity, and thy darkness shall be as the noonday. John 4, 14. But whosoever drinketh of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst, but the water that I shall give him shall be in him a well of water springing up into everlasting life. When the water was drawn, the governor of the feast declared, this best wine had been saved until the last. Consider that thought. Christ did not simply make wine, he made the best wine. But as it is written, eye hath not seen, nor ear heard, neither have entered into the heart of man the things which God hath prepared for them that love him. We too, when we have reached the marriage feast, will certainly declare with Paul in Romans 8, verse 18, for I reckon that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. But now consider this phrase, thou hast kept the good wine until now. In John 2. At the end of the age, at the presence of the bridegroom, and beyond the veil, when we shall be joined with him, thou hast kept the good wine until now. Consider our privileges of partaking with him what he has provided at our table. The first miracle of Moses was the changing of water into blood. The first miracle of Jesus was the changing of water into wine. And that for the comfort and the encouragement of the poor. The law could only bring death. The gospel brings life. Sin gives its best first. Its promises of pleasure, riches, honor, and so forth. And in the end, it gives its worst last. Sorrow, poverty, disgrace, ruin. Christ, on the contrary, gives his followers first the cross, the race, the battle, but last the crown, the rest, and the glory. Brethren, we are still these old water crocks, but we as Jesus should try to sanctify our social environment. We should add something to everyone that we come in contact with. We should never conform to the world, but always endeavor to transform it. In the meantime, the marriage feast of Cana is a prelude and a pledge of the marriage of the Lamb in the kingdom glory for which we wait. In ancient times, the bride's garments were white and embroidered. Psalms 45, Matthew 22, and Revelation 19. Let us be glad and rejoice and give honor to him, for the marriage of the Lamb is come, and his wife hath made herself ready. And to her was granted that she should be arrayed in fine linen, clean and white. For the fine linen is the righteousness of saints. And her attire was not her own glory, but for his beholding as a testimony of her purity and preparation to stand at his side. The groom came to her, accompanied by a procession to the abode of the bride. He came to her, and he takes her to his home that he has prepared for her. The man provides the home. The woman then keeps the home graciously provided. That is the background of Matthew 25, 1 through 13. And it finds its fulfillment in John 14, 2 and 3. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there ye may be also. All these things are very idealistic. All these things tend to get somewhat lost in today's modern world of self-sought goals, of self-prominence, of women's rights, of male ego and dominance, or of career plans and pursuits. There are many misplaced illusions and motives for marriage in this society. Two cannot live as cheaply as one, and seldom even within double what either did singly. Due to today's expansive lifestyle and inflation, the euphoria of one another's presence soon yields to the consideration of time, money, shelter, clothing, food, education, transportation, taxes, and utilities. If we marry for any other reason than to create a more whole and enriched life than ours alone, we may be marrying for the wrong reason. The other issues of life will intrude and challenge our real motives. They will intrude if we let them. To answer that I marry because my spouse loves me and I love them probably veils some more obscure purpose for the marriage. It is not sufficient for the woman to seek a dominating figure or someone to protect and guide her, nor for the man to seek one to merely display on his arm or to dominate, nor for someone to domineer him and make decisions for him. These are inadequate reasons. Marriage is most noble when it reaches for the reason that Christ calls his bride and for the reason that she accepts. Do we know why we first gave our hearts to Christ? Isn't it because that if he cared enough for us and what he saw we could become, we wanted to become a part of him and his plans so we could completely submit and entrust our whole being to his wise and loving provision on our behalf? While man is the head of the home and wife, he will always honor, protect, and respect this expression of grace and truth in his life. While woman is the supporting counterpart of man, she will develop and reflect her own perception of truth and righteousness for the edification of all around her. These things are true of Christ and his bride. While the twain shall be one, it is also true that the oneness, the wholeness, will not deny nor detract from the individuality and responsibility of each part. While each is to complement the other, they each stand as a testimony of the higher truths and principles that first bound them together. A consecrated couple will make their homes and lives a reflection of that higher bond. Time and home will be used on behalf of the same ones that Christ died for. There will be a sharing of plans, thoughts, words, even as Christ has done with us. There will be mutual honor as between Christ and his bride. There will be room for diversity of personality and roles, even as Christ has chosen diverse persons in his church. We must allow each, the individuality, to submit to Christ in ways we may not always fully appreciate. Yet the wholeness of Christ may only be seen in a composite picture that each contributes and will not be seen in any one individual alone. Marriage is more than a contract for mutual benefit. When the benefits are not realized as expectation urged, marriage may not be dissolved for subsequent quests. It is a sacred and perpetual trust. It is a moral commitment that must not be compromised. We must find ways to serve, honor, and please our mate, often unconditioned by expectations or reciprocation. In fact, they are better done in such ways that no conditions or reasons could be attached except for love and devotion. Hurts that are harbored because our labor is not acknowledged are hurts that will poison the bond of giving and yielding. Yet if we are the receiver, let us ever be prompt to acknowledge the love that gave it. there must be seasons of agreeable abstinence and solitude between you, that you may allow yourselves and your mate to seek the highest heavenly bonds without the attraction of one another's presence. Then, when being enamored with the presence of your mate is not the only thing on your mind, you will need a solid, workable program of managing an honorable life amidst a dishonorable society in these last days of this present evil world. It may be the hardest of times in which we live, yet it may be the greatest of times if your vision and commitments are high enough. In closing, I would like to have just a few personal words with Brother Chris and Marta. Is Mark and Ella here? They are here. Okay. And I want to just speak to you each momentarily. Chris, I knew you in Poland and saw your hunger for life and all there is to learn and experience. I saw your service and commitment. Your principles and standards were not borrowed, but practiced as from inner convictions. And I see that service still burns strong in your heart. Marta, I also knew you in your homeland, and there too I saw your hunger for life. I saw you venture over land and ocean one time to reach the Holy Land, to walk where Moses and Jesus walked. I saw your face in Tel Aviv, weary but triumphant, and I saw you eager to reach new horizons. Mark, I knew your family longer than I've known you, but knowing them, I know your love and commitment to the truth and to the harvest message. I know it is a love and not head knowledge alone. I know you want the truth to be prominent and a part of your home, and through your home to reach others. Ella, I knew you before you knew me, and I prayed for you when you were praying for light in a dark place, and I wept for joy when you found a place to grow spiritually. I rejoiced when I finally met you and saw you courageously using and growing in your newfound liberty. Your joy and hope today would never be so bright if you had not survived some darkness. Hope does bear fruit. You each have much to offer your chosen mates this day. Be givers more than receivers. Be imaginative as to how to give more. If you fulfill one another's joy, my joy this day will be full. Niech ci błogosławi Pan i niechaj cię strzeże. Niech rozjasni Pan oblicze swoje nad tobą i niech ci miłości będzie. Niech obraci Pan twarz Twoje ku Tobie i niech Ci da pokój. The Lord bless thee and keep thee. The Lord make His face to shine upon thee and be gracious unto thee. The Lord lift up His countenance upon thee
and give thee peace.